Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, my speech in Prescott, Arizona. I take questions from the audience. We talk about the stakes that are in front of us. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Support our program directly at charliekirk.com/support. Get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the Loan Experts I Trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com.
Thank you, everybody. Please take a seat. What a wonderful introduction that is. And great to be here, everybody. And that was a fabulous speech. You know, I got to be honest with you. Somebody told me, they sent me an email. They said, Charlie, you know, Lindsey Graham is introducing you. I said, oh, really? Can I get there early and ask the senator a couple questions? I said, Lindsey Graham really is going to come to this beautiful part of Arizona and introduce me. I said, let's just do a debate. I'd love to ask a couple questions, Mr. Graham. But I told her, she's got to change her name. Oh, he's got to change his name because he's no good, I'll tell you. He's got a big problems. Anyway, great to be here. Lots we can talk about. We're going to do some questions tonight, which is actually my favorite and the most important. I first want to relay my gratitude for all of you that support us at Turning Point USA. Look, I'm a little biased, but I believe that the work that Turning Point is doing is the most important work in the country. If we do not pass down our values on high school or college campuses, the country is over with. You know, look, we're going to talk about election integrity. We're going to talk about elections. We're going to talk about a lot of things. But the long-term game is what the Marxists have been doing against us for quite some time. We have to pass down our values to the next generation. It's not happening at all. In fact, the opposite is happening. They're teaching young people that the flag is colonialist, racist, misogynistic, bigoted. And Turning Point USA believes we are the greatest nation ever to exist in the history of the world. We believe in the promise of the Declaration and the Constitution, and we're not afraid to go against the left. You know, there's a lot of timidity sometimes in the conservative movement. We go to the places where we're not always welcome, but you know what's amazing? We finished our campus tour and we do so much at Turning Point USA, and it's a movement bigger than anything I could have ever imagined. The biggest problem that we had this last semester, whether it be bringing Riley Gaines, who's amazing on campus, or Candace Owens, who works with us at Turning Point USA, you know what the biggest problem we had is we could not find rooms big enough to fit all the students that wanted to attend our events. And look, we're not always a majority on these campuses, but there's a lot more conservative, patriotic young people out there than the media would ever lead you to believe. And they're not, and you know, it's amazing. Sometimes, like for example, I spoke at UC Davis, and this happens every so often. You know, Antifa comes with their weapons, and, you know, they come with, you know, their mostly peaceful approaches of bashing windows and all that nonsense. And the administrators come after us. The chancellor of the university, UC Davis, comes after me and attacks me personally and slandered me and, you know, just attacked me personally. And you think about it. Here's an optional, voluntary event for 90 minutes where I allow anybody that disagrees to go to the front of the line and have a microphone uninterrupted and say whatever they want to me. And you got to wonder, okay, you have 4 years with these kids. I get 90 minutes and you guys lose your mind. Maybe it's because you're afraid that I got something to say to these kids and you might lose your ideological monopoly on them. 90 minutes. Give me 90 minutes with a student and I'll at least get them to think differently. And again, you know, we say to anyone that disagrees on these campus events, and again, if there's someone that disagrees tonight, you're welcome to ask a question. You know, the rule applies everywhere, but think in this beautiful part of Arizona, it's mostly warm and welcoming, but we'll see. Again, whatever, it's an open invitation. And it really all of a sudden puts them on defense. They say, you know, we're not used to having somebody have to challenge our beliefs and our values. And again, we go into these hostile environments, and there's a couple things I want to mention tonight. Look, this beautiful part of Arizona, Yavapai County, is under attack from the left. You know this. This place is changing, okay? And something the left does very well is they constantly play offense. Arizona's my home now. It wasn't originally. I grew up in Chicago. Anyone, a refugee from Illinois? Anybody? A couple people? Yeah, wow, a lot of hands. And Illinois used to be a great place. That's not a joke. Chicago used to be a great city. That is not a joke. It's a laughingstock now. It's a third world hellscape dystopia. And I don't say that with delight. I used to love that place. And I'm tired of running. I'm tired of having to flee a city. I don't want to have to live here. I have a daughter. I want to raise my kids and my grandkids here in this state. But let's be honest. The way this state is going, we're all going to have to leave. It's not going in the right direction, everybody. It is rapidly becoming a Colorado or a California, and we got to talk about it. Now, this part of the state, you guys have got your act together. You believe in law and order. You guys are voting very ruby red, and you guys, whatever you're doing, you need to do more of it. But, of course, they're coming into the teacher unions and the local school districts. These people don't stop. They're trying to infect the local institutions here. And I only know some of the specifics, but I get so many messages and emails. And, again, it's so interesting, right? That, you know, the left, they leave the Bay Area and they start doing research and they say, oh yeah, you know, the crime and all this stuff. Let's go ruin Prescott. Like, okay. They come with this parasitic ideology, right? I mean, look, I live in Scottsdale, and Scottsdale is not the Scottsdale of 10 years ago. I mean, it is changing rapidly. They're doing queer theory in the schools, critical race theory, the vagrancy, the homelessness. There was, and again, I don't want to ruin your night, and I don't dwell on this except for the point that it's a fact. A person that was hypnotized by trans ideology murdered a 29-year-old girl on a hiking trail at 10 a.m. in the morning. Did you see this story in Scottsdale? Like, this is not Tucson, all right? Tucson is not my favorite place, okay? But, I mean, no offense. It's fine, but if they built the wall at Pima County, I don't think anybody would be. Just saying. I'm going to be honest. When the voting results came in, I think that if you were going to audit one place in Arizona, you got to audit Pima County. I just do not believe. Another 30,000 votes, another 40. Forget it, okay? Maricopa is worth auditing, but Pima County, give me a break. Anyway, if I offended you and you're from Pima County, stop taking yourself so seriously because the place is not great. This young lady, she's 29 years old walking her dog in Scottsdale, and she gets murdered, stabbed 15 times. That's not the Arizona we remember. Scottsdale? Are you kidding me? Right near the Mayo Clinic? By a guy who's trans, by the way. He comes out and he says, I wanted to be her, they, them pronouns. Has the media covered that? Has the media covered that a trans person murdered a 29-year-old on a hiking trail in Scottsdale? Where's Katie Hobbs, by the way? She's probably doing some trans parade thing. Right? No, she's a coward, and she shouldn't be. She's an illegitimate governor, if you ask me. She shouldn't be governor. And so, look, the state is changing. I mean, you know that. I just have to things to remind you. But what frustrates me the most, and I think what animates you and why you're here tonight, is that I still think we're the majority of this state. I think decent people still outnumber the indecent. I'm tired of these labels. By the way, I know this is a Republican event. I don't associate with most Republicans. I don't. I think most Republicans are a waste of rations. I really do. Now, you might say, well, Charlie, you know, what about, of course they're better than Democrats, but I'm sick of the Mitt Romneys, right? I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it, right? I want fighters. I want people that are actually going to listen to their voters and stop protecting the uniparty consensus and acting like everything is great. I think it's a... Listen to your voters. One of my favorite books ever written and a speech given by Viktor Frankl, who wrote Man's Search for Meaning and Yes to Life. It's more of a philosophical book. It's amazing, by the way. Every young person should be required to read it. He said, look, He went to a concentration camp, nearly lost his life. And the point is that he said, look, there's really only two types of people. There's the decent and the indecent. And I think that's really powerful. I think there's more decent people in Arizona than indecent people. Katie Hobbs is not a decent person, period. She's not a decent person. And yeah, it manifests itself politically at times, right? But I don't think the state is ideologically or politically as far gone as it feels with these results, okay? So then what is there to do? Well, you guys got to keep on, you guys have been doing a pretty good job up here. In Maricopa, we got a whole mess of stuff to fix. But, you know, you guys are able to get your results within a week, which is amazing. For us, it's an all quarter affair, right? 20,000 votes here, 30,000 votes. The whole thing is a mockery. It's a joke. And look, I'm an outsider coming into this state. Again, I'm still learning how to pronounce all these beautiful counties. It's like, you know, on my live stream, oh my goodness. When I first said Prescott, oh my goodness. I had to repent. So I never made that mistake again. I got 20,000 emails, I think, from some of you with the phonetic spelling. And some other very salty language, but the point was taken. Well, so I'm still learning this state. I'm an outsider, but here's what I could tell you. I've traveled all 50 states. I've, you know, had a chance to travel the world a fair amount. I'm young. I've seen a lot. I've learned a lot. I love this country. I love this state. And we're not going to win back the state by doing the same thing we've done over and over again. It's not going to happen. And what does that mean, right? Well, look. I think this state is at its best when we call out that part of our problem has been Republicans in this state. Not all the time, but part of the time. That part of the problem is that people don't see necessarily the differences. They don't see the clear fighting for their values. You know, they don't always see the contrast between Democrats or Republicans. I do believe this state is a center-right state. And here's also the exciting thing for so many of you. You probably say, Charlie, how are we going to win the White House in 2024? Now, look, I'm honest to a fault. I'm brutally honest. I'm also a very positive person, right? So it's very difficult to be both at times, especially when your country is under enemy occupation of an illegitimate president and illegitimate governor. It's just very hard, right? Very hard. But you got to be positive, right? Life is not worth living if you're perpetually negative, especially if you're a religious person. You have to be positive. I think if you're a Christian, it's necessary because you should have ultimate hope. I think that's without saying. But things are not looking good for 2024. We got to be honest. It's not, okay? And it's not, if there is just one thing you remember, I'm a Trump guy 100%. If you're not a Trump guy, whatever. I'm not here to tell you to be a Trump guy or not. Because I'm not going to say, okay, well, maybe you're all Trump people. There you go. Sure. So, and I've got to know the man very well. Look, we all have flaws, but boy, does he have virtues. Here's my one piece of advice to you. Anytime anyone tells you about how flawed he is, say, can you name one virtue of the man? And if they can't name one, they're intellectually dishonest and they're an intellectual coward because he has a lot of virtues. He's courageous. He works his tail off. He's exposed the deep state. I mean, again, this Durham report is such a joke, right? But now, do you need more evidence that this guy has been unconstitutionally targeted from every possible direction? Right? I mean, every direction. So, okay, but if you're a DeSantis person or if you're a Nikki Haley person, I'd love to meet you because I haven't met one yet. But if you're any one of these people, right? Whatever. It's actually not the point of my speech here tonight. Primary will play itself out. I think the primary should largely be ended because the point is this. The day of candidates mattering as the most important thing is over. It is done. If you believe that, you're living in an antiquated electoral and political system, okay? Just look at John Fetterman, who, all jokes aside, is a brain-dead person, okay? He's brain-dead. I'm not trying to make light of it. He literally cannot talk in sentient sentences, okay? That's not a joke. It's a real thing. Elected as senator. And you might say, oh, Charlie, how can Joe Biden possibly? It's not about the candidate. It's about the multi-billion dollar machine they come in to harvest ballots and chase ballots and register voters and relax signature verification requirements. So what I'm trying to get at, and the philosophy, if I can communicate, if you're like, boy, we got to win back the White House. I agree, right? And so I think Trump's going to be the nominee either the hard way or the easy way. I hope we take the easy way, okay? The easy way is the other candidates decide not to go through the chainsaw and have their political career ruined, okay? And I said that's very expensive. A lot of people are going to get rich and there'll be a lot of entertaining television and Trump's going to have to do the Trump thing where he decides to destroy one political career in slow motion on TV after another. I'm sorry, that's what he does. You might not like it, but then great quote from St. Augustine. If you argue with reality, welcome to hell. If you think that you can beat Donald Trump in the gutter, like, you're done. I'm sorry. The guy is a Brooklyn street fighter and he's going to beat you. Okay? You might not like it. The guy will beat you. And you might say, well, Charlie, you know, I don't like it. Again, you don't get, there's things in life you get to choose and not choose. What you do get to say is he's better. If you don't think he's better than Joe Biden, then that's besides the point. Here's what I'm going to tell you though. You might say, but I don't like him because I don't think he can win. Anybody can win. By the way, he already won. Okay, so in 16 and 20. So don't, like, it's a silly argument. But I do acknowledge that, yes, a lot of people hate him, okay? A lot of people are going to be motivated to cheat and lie and steal and all that sort of stuff. Okay, fine. But even with all that, all the baggage, they're going to indict him another 3 times. Doesn't matter to me. It shouldn't matter to you. It's all a bunch of nonsense. And they're gonna do all this stuff. Here's what matters or does not matter. Do we have a political machine that can get our low propensity voters out? Do we have an election integrity machine? Are we actively trying to replace the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors? That matters a lot more to me than whether or not Donald Trump's gonna have 52 or 60% of the delegates. That's not interesting to me, okay? It will be entertaining to me, maybe in the evening. Great for ratings, by the way. Our podcast has taken off because of the horse race. It's not good for the country because you know why? The Democrats are going to laugh at us. They're going to have a complete, okay, Joe Biden's senile and all that. Doesn't matter. They're going to put him into a multi-billion dollar machine where they're going to sue like crazy in Arizona. They're going to make it easier to cheat, easier to steal. And what are we doing? We're bickering over delegates? It's a recipe for disaster. So I've called for an end to the primary. Not just because I'm loyal to Trump, because he's a friend of mine, but because I believe that we do not win the White House in 2024. Boy, I hesitate to say what many of you are thinking. We're going to be in really rough shape. Okay, because I know some of you are probably saying the country's over. I'm not going to say that, but we'll be closer to that precipice than ever. With Title 42 being invaded 5,000 people a day, there's only so much we could take. I think we agree, right? There is no country that is unbreakable. Boy, we've showed a great amount of toughness as a country having to deal with this, you know, this regime currently. But it's very winnable. So what does that mean on the macro? On the macro is it'd be nice if we had a Republican National Committee that actually did their job. The RNC is a complete waste of time. Please stop giving money to them, okay? Waste of time. They don't spend your money well. They're not investing in the key states. They have invested in this state, okay? I make no friends by saying this. I get attacked by them. By the way, all of you guys agree, which just is confirmation of that. Here's the point. In this county, in Maricopa, here's what we're doing at Turning Point Action, okay? We are going to do everything we possibly can to try to make change at the Board of Supervisors, and here's the one thing that might not have full agreement, but Maricopa County in particular, I think it's a mistake to tell everybody to go vote on one day, okay? I'm not saying to vote by mail, but in-person early voting needs to be entertained. Why? We broadcasted our play. The great Kerry Lake said, hey, we're going to have everybody show up on election day. And that smug little twerp, Bill Gates and Stephen Richer said, oh, really? You're going to have everyone show up on election day? So you're broadcasting us your number one play? It'd be a shame if all the machines in Anthem didn't work till 2 p.m., it'd be a shame that in Wickenburg, the reddest part of Maricopa County, that they have 3-hour waiting lines. And you might say, well, Charlie, the solution is to get, you know, precinct-based voting. I agree. Not going to happen anytime soon. So you got to play with the hand that you're dealt, right? Precinct, by the way, we should have only one day of voting in the ideal. I'll make sure my position is very clear, right? One day voting, precinct-based, get rid of this mail and stuff, get rid of this absentee. That's 100% what we need to work towards. 100%, right? But, you gotta deal with reality, right? We got this awful situation ahead of us in 24, so we have a decision to make, right? The decision is, do we do what we did in the midterms and in 2020 again, which is try to tell everyone to go vote on one day? Or do we try to at least spread it out with the highest levels of integrity possible? Nothing's 100%. where I'm not a fan of mail-in. I will never mail in a ballot. That's just me personally. If you do it, you have more trust in the system than I do. But you know what I will do? I'll go vote in person a couple days before, in person early. Okay. It's not a hot, I don't feel as secure, but it's something. You know why? I will encourage someone, because I get these emails from people. Charlie, I couldn't vote because I'm disabled and I had to wait 2 hours in the sun and I wasn't able to cast my vote. And I say to myself, it would have been better for that person to have been able to vote early the Saturday before the election than have to deal with that circus that the Maricopa County of cartel criminals put on election day. Right? It would have been better. And so this is the way we have to start thinking. And then we have to be filing blitzkriegs of lawsuits. Again, this is not my, we got enough stuff going on. Where's the RNC? MIA. We need a, let me say it again, a blitzkrieg of lawsuits to try to make it harder to cheat. You have, and again, it's got to be more than just Kerry and more than this. We need stone cold killers of people that do nothing but election integrity, lawfare. And I'm telling you, this is not happening the way it should. The Democrats sue 50 times for every time we sue. They nonstop sue. And it's like little stuff, you know, signature verification, like nerdy stuff you might not think, but it adds up. And you might say in this, oh, Charlie, you know, it doesn't make a difference. I'm not convinced. Okay. We have an awful, and I believe illegitimate attorney general right now because we said the little stuff does not matter. That's 250 votes. And let's just call it for what it is. There is no way the votes that came out of Apache County were ethical or clear. Okay? Fraud on the Native reservations is just well known. No one wants to say it out loud. They're all afraid of it. They double vote. They triple vote. And I'm still learning this. Navajo Nations and Apache County. The whole thing's very confusing. Not in Navajo County. Anyway. But did you notice Abe Hamadeh and Chris Mays are right there neck and neck, and the projections show Abe Hamadeh should have went up by 100 votes, and they just discover a bunch of votes in Apache County. But guess what? That was the result of many decades of lawsuits trying to make the Native reservations untouchable. All that lawfare added up. All those little things. I'm more interested in that than who can say a better one-liner on some Republican presidential debate in October. I'm a lot more interested in the plumbing, the boring stuff, the clipboard and tennis shoes type stuff. That's what's going to win the state. Okay, so I'm going over time here and we'll go to questions, but I know all of you agree this great panic that's happening in the country. I get it. Okay? Here's my other fear, and I want you all to agree to help remedy the fear. We cannot disenfranchise ourselves. You're never going to have 100% turnout, right? But there is a trend that is manifesting of how much we have talked about the illegitimate election is people saying, well, then what's the point? How should I vote at all? That is an awful idea. You need to stomp that out. And anybody that says that, you need to say that is wrong. That is giving the enemy what they want. You have a duty and an obligation to continue to vote and to make voting more secure. Because what the numbers are showing us is that there's a tapering effect of people say, well, you keep on talking about a stolen election. What's the point? That's not good, everybody. That is a Democrat dream to have our best voters say. And I'll tell you right now, the exact numbers, I know in Yavapai, there were at least tens of thousands of voters that came out for Trump in 2020 that did not come out for Kerry Lake. In Maricopa, it was, I think, well over 180,000 to 200,000. Kerry Lake, I refuse to say the word lost, Kerry Lake fell short of 17,000, 18,000 votes. So who are these people? Again, it's presidential year, but you got to wonder, were some of these people saying, forget it. Forget it. I'm done. And I can prove part of it because we have a very active audience, and this is very perplexing to me, on our radio show. Anyone will listen on Real America's Voice, if you guys do. We love you guys. Thank you. The perplexing thing is people say, Charlie, I watch your show every single day. And they, you know, they email us and they prove it, right? And I refuse to vote. I say, really? You spend time watching my show and you won't do like a 7-minute thing. Like that to me, I have not figured out. Thousands of emails, everybody, I received post-midterms of people in this state that said, I refuse to vote. I can show you the emails. We got a big problem. We got to make sure we fix that in whatever way possible, because the dream of the Democrats would be to have the patriots stay home so that the bad guys can just waltz to victory. We got to be vigilant about that all times. Let me close with this, and then we'll do some questions, which is Arizona can go one of two ways. I'm committing my life and my career in the immediate to turn this state in an unexpected direction, to make it look much more like Florida and less like Colorado. It can be done. It can be done. Somebody said, Charlie, are you running for office? I said, no way. No way. I said, I'm having way too much fun impacting millions of people, by the way, on what we're doing on our show. And by the way, you want me doing this, not being some rink-a-dink senator or congressman. That's boring. You know what's interesting? Getting millions of young people to love the country again. That's interesting, right? They win, though, when we surrender and we give up. Their recipe, their equation, their formula is us saying, what is the point? Yuri Bezmenov, who I encourage you all to become familiar with, was a Soviet KGB spy who then became a whistleblower and told us what the KGB playbook was. He said the most critical thing to turn a free country into a Marxist country is demoralization. You are living through a deliberate, planned, concocted, and intentional demoralization and propaganda campaign. That's what Title 42 is all about. That's what Afghanistan was all about. They want you to be like, man, whatever. I'm done. And you turn off the TV. We got to do the opposite. We got to get more involved. We have to stay more prayerful. We have to be obedient regardless of how overwhelming things seem. And, you know, people ask me, they say, well, Charlie, do you think we're going to win or we're going to lose? And my honest answer, because I'm brutally honest, I have no idea. I can't stand when people at events like this just, in the end, we're going to win. Yeah, okay, in the ultimate end, I believe Jesus is on his throne. Of course, obviously. But I have no idea. I have no guarantee this country will survive another decade. No guarantee. But I do know that I and you have an opportunity to do something about it. I know that it's not for certain the collapse, and it's not for certain the survival. It is in this unknown middle. That's exciting to me. It's exciting because I get to be alive at a time where every word I speak and every speech I give and everything I do makes a monumental generational difference. And I hope all of you join me in that fight. Okay, let's do some questions. And thank you for letting me riff a little bit, everybody. Okay. Yes.
Instead of a question, I have an axiom that you wanted to test, because I know you test many claims that come by you.
Okay.
The first one is, when the culture offers no adventure, the only adventure left is to destroy the culture. And the second one, oh, you can respond to that if you want to.
Sure, no, that, there is some truth to that.
The other one is, there are no political solutions to spiritual problems.
That's interesting.
And all problems are spiritual problems.
I do agree with that. So I try to stay away from phrases that are too absolute. Except truth, because truth is absolute. So let's think about that. There's no political solution to spiritual problems. Does that mean that people that are spiritual should not act politically? No. That's a mistake. So let me kind of push. I'm a very outspoken and proud Christian. I hope you are too. And all problems in the physical are spiritual that manifest. But when we, for example, contest at our local school board to try to protect an 11-year-old from being taught trans ideology, that's spiritually good for society and necessary. Now, does that solve the spiritual rot? No. But politics and getting involved in the civic arena is a place where good people can fight evil people, and we should. And so this is, some people will say, well, Charlie, it's all spiritual. Politics has no place at all. We just need to try to win souls over. We need to do that. But that is so morally troubling. If that was the case, why does it say in Jeremiah 29:7, demand the welfare of the nation that you are in because your welfare is tied to your nation's welfare? If that's the case, what are we supposed to make of Daniel or Esther or Mordecai, Nehemiah, Jeremiah, Joseph, who were counselors to the king, trying to fight for goodness? So we'd be very clear. Politics will not lead to any sort of salvation. It will not lead towards any sort of ultimate redemption. But politics matters a lot. It matters a lot to how we're ruled, how we treat the innocent, whether or not church is deemed essential or non-essential. It matters whether or not the unborn are protected. It matters whether or not 14-year-olds are able to chemically castrate themselves without parental permission. It matters a lot whether or not you could send your kid to the school of your choice. It matters a lot whether or not you can own firearms. And so I would make the argument that the basic reason I'm a conservative is for spiritual reasons. But we also must understand that there is an invisible game around us that is constantly playing, that is playing out. But remember, Satan is the prince of this world. And I believe that we are called to push back against evil. Psalm 97:10, my favorite Bible verse. Everyone has their own favorite Bible verse. If you love God, you must hate evil. I think Christians have done a great job of building big churches. Good job of having very well-produced televangelism series. I think modern Christianity has failed in the regard of hating evil. I think we've done a very poor job of that. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Charlie, first of all, for coming out. It's very stimulating, and I enjoyed listening to you. I'm going to speak on behalf of, I'll just call myself, the average Joe out
sure.
there. What can I do in a kind of an impactful way to help keep Arizona red?
It's a great question. First, you have to believe that every decision you make matters. The enemy and the opposition will try to disempower your micro decisions towards the macro. First of all, I'm a big believer in duty and obedience to doing what is right, regardless of how you think things will turn out. I believe it morally, and I believe it spiritually. I think far too often Christians and conservatives wager their activism based on whether or not they think things are going to go their way. I think that's wrong. That goes against the core tenet of duty, which is I'm going to do what is right always, routinely, regardless of the kind of wagering odds. So that's number one. You have to commit to that. And then I'll just remind you from a very concrete example. If we would have been able to get 300, let's just say 500 other people statewide, we might have a Republican attorney general that could be actively suing this Democrat governor. And so I know people that emailed me, my vote does not matter. It does not matter. Yeah, I have over 400 of those in Arizona, and they didn't vote. And it just pains me. It's like, my goodness, am I not getting the message across? Am I not? So I did a lot of soul searching. Yeah, thank you. And so that's one thing. But what can the quote unquote average person do? Well, I don't believe in anything such as the average at all. I think every person can act in heroic and beautiful and big ways. Number one, you got to pray for your nation, fast for your nation, get your spiritual disciplines right. I think that's really important. The third thing, if you're not a precinct committee person, I encourage you to become a precinct committee person. It's incredibly important. It's the backbone of the Republican Party here. Get involved in the Republican Party, which again, it might appear that I'm contradicting myself because I'm like the number one critic against the Republican Party. But again, I live in reality. I don't live in dreamland. The Republican Party has to be a vessel for grassroots American patriots. The third party is not going to happen. It is a silly, stupid idea. It's not going to happen, okay? It will fracture ourselves. Trust me. So let's make the Republican Party people-centered, grassroots-centered, become a precinct committee person. It matters more than you could ever imagine. And then finally, you know, when it becomes time for when ballots go out, you know, volunteer as a ballot chaser and try to get low propensity voters that have a likelihood of being disenfranchised on election day, and particularly people that can't stand in line for 2 hours for two reasons. time because they have a lot of kids or because of physical issues to try to vote the most secure way possible so we do not have a redux of the 2022 midterm election. My hope is that we have a system. We're trying to develop it at Turning Point Action, but if somebody else wants to do it, if the AZGOP will do it, praise God, I'll happily step aside, where millions of average Joes, don't like the term, but that's your term, right? Ordinary people can feel empowered to do 30 minutes of activism a day to try to win back Arizona, right? And I know that so many of you are going to say, Charlie, put me to work. But we need to find a way to put all of your energy to work in the best possible way. And I think that way, quite honestly, is learning the lesson from the mess of the midterms of 2022 and not allowing the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors to try. You think I'm mad because they disenfranchised Carrie Lake? Imagine if the whole country comes down to Arizona and we fall 800 votes short. Oh, my goodness. Could you imagine? We got to do everything we possibly can to not let that happen. God bless you. Thank you so much. Are we going in? Where are we going? We're going here?
The next question is from Linda Gray, former senator of Arizona.
Eric McTaska, in his book, Letter to the American Church, I would like your analogy of his book and pastors who are afraid to preach God's word, the penalties, and yet the love for people who ask for forgiveness. How do we get pastors to get involved, speak the truth, and get away from separation of church and state and allowing pastors to go ahead and speak about different candidates and policies?
Yeah, first, I just had Eric on the show. He's terrific, and I love the book. We have a pastor summit, actually, at TPUSA we're doing next week. We have 1,000 pastors coming to our pastor summit, the largest in the country. Isn't that amazing? So we got a lot going on at Turning Point. We see a problem, we try to fix it. That's why we're in the game, right? So I analyze this as there's three different types of pastors and churches. I will first talk about the courageous. There are some amazing courageous pastors. I hope you have some here in this local area. I'm sure you do. These are people that, for example, praised God and thanked God that for the reversal of Roe versus Wade, just thanked from the pulpit. Do you know that 95% of American pastors didn't mention the reversal of Roe versus Wade from the pulpit? I had a pastor come up to me and he said, Charlie, when is God going to make a move of grace and intervention in the country? I said, oh, he did. The reversal of Roe versus Wade is nothing short of a miracle. Nothing short of a miracle. And 95% of his bride said, meh, not impressed, God. Stop praying for a miracle if you don't thank God when they happen. So most pastors are indifferent towards God's miraculous moves. So that's a problem. But there are courageous ones. Jack Hibbs is a great pastor, for example. He does a beautiful job. The church that we do so much stuff with, beautiful friends, Dream City Church down in the Valley. I don't know if you know about the Barnett family. They do a great job. They're courageous. They're bold. They're awesome. And Mark Driscoll's doing a great job at Trinity Church, too, in the Valley. And, you know, it goes across theological, you know, denominations. And which is great. But the vast, and then there's the complicit churches, which I call out. I believe that they are doing essentially what it said in 1 Peter. They're false prophets. These are the gay pride pastors. These are the trans, the LGBT, the CRT, the racial justice. I have no patience for these pastors. They are not a majority. They're about 5 to 10%. But you know what I'm talking about. I mean, what has happened to the Lutheran church, by the way? I mean, I was in Sedona the other day and I drove by and there were more like gay references outside of this Lutheran church than about Jesus. I couldn't believe it. And the Methodist church and Episcopalian, it's just where mainline Protestantism has gone in this country. It's just sick. It really is. But then there, and I made a promise to a friend. So I'm going to try to not break the promise, I promised I wouldn't call these pastors cowards. So I'm not calling them cowards. So they're the biggest group, right? So we know what they're not. But they're opportunities. They're moldable. These are the people that we need. that are 70 to 80% of pastors. And a lot of them are great people. They're in it for the right reasons, but they'll say something of this garden variety of nonsensical, anti-biblical jargon. Okay? I only preach the gospel. Or we don't do politics around here. Or that's too divisive. Now, lovingly, but truthfully, because Jesus was both, love and truth, 100% of both, you should say, that's a bunch of nonsense. Hold on. You only preach the gospel? What does the gospel say about harming children? Tell me. Do you preach that? Because we're harming thousands of kids, millions of kids, with this pornographic transgender nonsense in our schools across the country. You mention that? How about this? I only preach the gospel is what they say. Well, what is the gospel? Tell me. And if the gospel can be understood, why did Jesus quote Deuteronomy more than any other book? You know, Deuteronomy is the most quoted book, secular or religious, that the founding fathers cited in the creation of our government. If you do not have a pastor that can even spell Deuteronomy, he should resign. They're almost like they're repulsed by the Torah, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Yeah, they're tough books. Learn them or get out of the ministry. Go learn Hebrew. Get into it. You have no place preaching the word of God if you do not understand what the laws of Moses have to say and why Jesus was taught not just as in the Torah, but referenced it as a way towards our ultimate salvation. Has a lot to say about civil government. And then finally, the other things they say is, well, we don't do division around here. And this is the one that just drives me the most nuts. Look, if you got into the ministry to unite people, you got into the wrong line of business. You should try to love all people. You should try to heal people. But in Luke 15, it says, I did not come here to unite. I came here to divide, to literally turn brother against brother and father against son. Look, folks, when you're talking about the issues of eternity, it is by default divisive. Truth in a world of lies is necessarily divisive. Since when do we allow the word divisive? Instead, we should say, you know what it is? No, it's clarifying. What you call divisive, I call liberating, because I can see distinctions between good and evil, the holy and the profane, between man and woman, between man and nature, between man and God. What you call dividing, I call distinctions, which is what keeps us from the chaos of the loss that Satan wishes for us. If your pastor is repeating that jargon, should lovingly go find something else for that person. There's a lot of things they could be called into. You know what we need? We need a Bonhoeffer brigade in this country. That's what we need. We need pastors that are willing to say, you know what? I'm going to stand bold and courageous. Most important thing is winning the souls for Christ. The second most important thing is make sure you can do the first thing. If we don't get this right, oh, Charlie, I don't like them because they're Calvinist. I don't care. I don't like them as a Pentecostal. I don't care. I don't like them as they're Presbyterian. I don't care. You know what? You don't get your act together, we're going to be having these theological debates from prison. We allow the church to be shut down in strip clubs, marijuana dispensaries, and liquor stores to remain open. The church was deemed non-essential, and they took Pentecost and Easter from us, and we just kind of sit down and sit idly by, and no. The church is just waiting to be reawakened. And I can see it in your eyes. I can see it in your reaction. You're probably saying, Charlie, why is my pastor not doing this? Because they're afraid. Challenge them. Love on them. If they don't course correct, leave that church. Thank you so much. Next question.
Hi, Charlie. I'm Deanne Bennett. I just moved to Prescott, Arizona 10 months ago from Las Vegas, Nevada. My question to you is, how do we keep Marxism out of our churches and out of our Christian schools? The left has gone after accreditation organizations to get to our Christian schools because they would never be able to do it one at a time. And I had to leave a church of 5,000 in 2020 because they were teaching my children white privilege, white passing, things like this on a youth group. It was a 7-week YouTube series, and I was devastated by this as a Christian woman who loves Jesus. What can I do?
I can sense you love Jesus, and thank you for the honesty. So what can you do? Where in the Bible does it say that tolerance is a virtue? It doesn't. Why do we allow secular religions to dictate how we run our churches? I'm told by pastors we have to be tolerant. I say, why? And then you know what I say? I say, what's the Greek word for tolerance? And they say, I don't know. Yeah, because there really isn't one. Because it's not in the New Testament. I could tell you the Greek word for love, for compassion, for long-suffering, for sympathy. But for tolerance. No. The opposite is actually said. You should not tolerate evil. You should not tolerate lies. You see, we conflate love with acceptance of bad worldviews, unbiblical beliefs, and they're two totally different things. And I'll prove to you the best example of this, okay? Because you might say, well, Charlie, how does this manifest? The woke pastor, like Andy Stanley, for example, who's a disaster, right, from Georgia, very popular, he brings up a trans person on stage, and he says, this person is the bravest person I know and is wonderful. And we need to affirm this person and affirm how they see themselves. Big pastor in Georgia, right? Because he says we have to be tolerant. Now, not doing this on stage, the proper way to handle it would be a pastor saying, I love you so much, I'm not going to allow you to think you're something that you're not. I'm not going to affirm this seed of darkness that is manifested in your soul. I love you so much, I'm going to tell you that what you're doing, you're on a path for self-destruction, of annihilation, of self-hatred, and possibly even suicide. I love you so much that I know that God's plan for you is greater than the torment that you feel, and let's try to get to the root cause of that and liberate you, which only Christ can do. Now, that is called intolerant. Oh yeah, it's intolerant. Why is that a bad thing? It's intolerant of the evil, but it's loving of the person. So how do we reject Marxism? Well, first we have to understand what Marxism is. CRT, very simple. Call everything racist till you control it. That's what CRT is, okay? You might, your friends probably ask you, what is CRT? You could just say, Charlie Kirk told me, call everything racist till you control it, okay? It's that simple. It's about power. What is Marxism? Take other people's stuff and pretend you hate the rich, right? When in reality, they want to be rich. It's not that hard. But said differently, Marxism is just the satanic idea of trying to turn classes against one another. That's what it is. It's just classes or people against one another. So how do we get it out of our churches? We as Christians need to stand up against this and be unafraid to excommunicate the evil. And guess what? This is what one pastor once told me. They don't talk to me much anymore. Open line, by the way. They can always come on the show. And by the way, most pastors don't know the Bible very well. One of the biggest things I ever learned is amazing. And he said, well, Charlie, my attendance might go down. I said, there's nothing wrong with trimming your congregation down to a manageable size in the pursuit of truth. If your church is a TED Talk with an ask for money with a rock concert wearing skinny jeans, you, my friend, are in the wrong line of business. You are in the truth-telling business. And if you don't like the truth-telling business, go find something else. Because we need warriors. We need a Bonhoeffer brigade, not the Vichy French. Thank you so much. I think we have time for a couple more, right? Yeah. Okay.
Hello, John. In your work with the younger demographic, what percentage of that demographic would you say have come to believe their rights come more from government and less from God? And do you see a market change going forward as a result of your interaction with them that they may come to believe their rights come more from God and less from government?
Yeah, the majority of young people definitely, I actually don't think the emphasis on rights is helpful. Yes, this is a much longer speech. I think it's a little bit of a vocabulary hijacking that's happened in modernity. I actually think obligations matter a lot more than rights. This is a deeper conversation. And so, for example, people say, I have a right to this, I have a right to that, I have a right to that. Now, in the natural rights theory of government, it is true that you have a right to speech, a right to assembly. However, I would rather emphasize what a human being ought to do than what a human being can do. I actually think that's a much better way to communicate to a young person, because if you emphasize the idea And they emphasize it incorrectly, right? Where they say, well, you have a right to this, you have a right to that, you have a right to this. And in reality, it ends up becoming a hyper-narcissistic way of viewing your own existence. And again, this is not an easy fix, right? But forget who they think the rights come from. They look at themselves as the centerpiece of all decision-making. And this is one of the reasons, you know, why we're seeing birth rates plummet, why suicide is increasing, depression has increased, alcoholism increased, drug usage, pornography rates. If you think you are the only and most important thing ever to exist, it creates manic and miserable people. We know the happiest people, the most fulfilled people, are ones with purpose that have a tie to an obligation that is larger to themselves. A duty-based society is actually more desirable than, quote-unquote, a self-rights-based society. But with that being said, where do they think rights come from? Definitely not from God. Many of them don't even believe in God, tragically, which is something I'm trying to solve. And everybody here tonight has lots in common, obviously, two of which is we believe there is a God and we are not him. Very simple things, right? And that hierarchy to our existence, and I say this and it drives the Marxist absolutely nuts, which is the Marxism is a war on religion. Whoever asked the question earlier, it's an unrepentant crusade against religion. You might be here tonight and you might not like all the religion talk, and that's fine. I own it. I'm not here to, you know, say, to cut any corners. But it is a fact, and you must acknowledge this, that if you have a society that no longer believes in God, then you cannot have an absolute good or absolute truth. My only ask of you, for those of you here tonight, you say, Charlie, I'm not a Christian, I don't like this stuff. Okay, I hope you change that, but you must be honest, intellectually honest enough to believe in the necessity of God. Because your whole life, you've probably heard about the excesses of religion. Hyper-religious fanatics. Have you ever heard a CNN special or a Time magazine article about the excesses of secularism? What happens when a society becomes too secular? The Soviet Union, that's what happens. Mao's China, that's what happens. Yes, you can go too far in a hyper-religious fanatical way. That's a complete, we are nowhere near that in this society. We're on the opposite. We are towards a hyper-secular society. If you remove God, people need to find a place of meaning, and they're trying to find that meaning in government or in some sort of social cause or whatever it might be. And so that's why it's a spiritual war, my friend. Appreciate the question. Thanks so much. All right, I think this will be the last question, right? Okay.
All right. Thank you for being here, and congratulations on the new baby.
Thank you.
My favorite amendment is the Second Amendment, and I'm just going to ask you, first, I think you should know that Yavapai County was the first county to claim to be a Second Amendment sanctuary county.
Oh, I love that. That's great.
Yeah, so that, yes. So what I'd like to ask you to do through TPUSA is if you can maybe form a young person's a youth organization for shooting, trap shooting, skeet shooting, pistol shooting, and engage the NRA and all the gun industry to help you. I think they would.
I love that. I love that. Thank you. And I love the Second Amendment too. And I get so much trouble when I say this, but you guys are going to love it. So I said this, and boy, the internet blew up, and I stand by every word. So one of the reasons why our Second Amendment is under attack is because weak Republicans are afraid to go on TV and go in front of people and say why we have a Second Amendment. And so let's just remind ourselves. It's not for hunting. I love hunting. It's great. It's not for trap shooting. So that's also great. It's not for self-defense. It's not. It's for a free people to be able to, hopefully it never happens in our lifetime, to be able to defend themselves against a tyrannical government. And if you do not make that argument, then you concede. Well, then why don't you just have a shotgun if it's just for self-defense? If it's just for target shooting, Why don't you just have a single bolt action rifle? No. It's about the protection of liberty. And we must also simultaneously acknowledge that any time you have liberty, whether it be driving, going out to restaurants, you're going to have externalities and costs that are not ideal. That is called life. You want to get rid of 50,000 auto deaths a year? Ban cars. We have decided as a society the benefit, the net benefit of driving is worth the societal cost, right? We need to be also clear on the Second Amendment that some lunatics are going to act in ways we do not support. We don't like it. We don't support it. But we have a Second Amendment because the Second Amendment protects all the other amendments. The Second Amendment is the Guardian Amendment. There is no first without the second. And that's why they got to get rid of it. Mao, Hitler, Mussolini, Stalin, Pol Pot, they always disarm the citizenry. Always. And it starts with little trimming on the edges. Do you think for a second that the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, would have annexed Hong Kong if every single one of those freedom protesters had an AR-15 around their back? No. The CCP would have said, we don't want the bloodshed, we don't want it. It actually keeps you from conflict. When people have weapons, all of a sudden, the tyrants do not have complete and total control over the society. That's why we have a Second Amendment. Thank you. So, two things, everybody. In closing, I want to reiterate my gratitude. I love Arizona. Stay involved. Stay engaged. Please help Turning Point if you can. A way you can help Turning Point USA, I'm going to give you two ways to help us. So for your best gift, it could be 50 cents, it could be $50, it could be $5. Whatever it is, I know you're getting crushed by inflation. It's a great deal. Out in the lobby, we have these books. My book, College Scam. Your best gift, whatever that best gift is, all proceeds go to Turning Point USA. Okay? So whatever your best gift is, you guys can support us and get a book in exchange. This is a topic we did not touch tonight. The college scam kind of speaks for itself and I prove it. So, if you disagree, then you definitely need to read it. So, but for your best gift, you guys can get that. If it's only a dollar, then fine. Right? Whatever you're able to give, please do that. Secondly, if you're not yet on your smartphone, subscribe to our podcast. It's free of charge. Look, they're coming after all of us. Okay? They're coming after Bannon. They've come after Tucker. They come after O'Keefe. So if you can help us by subscribing to our podcast, that helps us a lot. And then, yes, please keep us in your prayers. I live under no delusion. They're going to come very hard for me and Turning Point. My ask for you is when they do, that you guys have our back. Okay? All right. Thank you so much, everybody. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.